The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
For me, footwork has been something that's got me out of trouble on more than one occasion on and off the pitch, so I'll go with that one.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
Right, this weekend it is Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa debut as manager, obviously. And I'm delighted to say it is Ty Bracey's OTBAM debut this morning to talk about this. Ty, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
So what's your level of excitement about this? Are you like super excited to see exactly what happens? Are you feeling a little bit of separation anxiety from the Villa fan who was just the manager, who's now going to be in the dugout against us in a couple of weeks' time? What are you thinking?
I mean, it started off a bit, you know, after it took a lot to sink in to come to the conclusion, you know, that Dean was actually gone. Whether it was a bit premature or not, it depends on who you ask. You know, I understand both sides of the story. You know, there's people who say it was the right time and then people who say he should have been given more time based on things that had happened over the last 3 years. But the more I thought about Steven Gerrard being in charge, the more I got used to it, the more I got excited about it. And he has said in his interviews, he speaks very, very passionately in his interviews. He's a very no-nonsense type of coach. And I'm really excited to see him bring that to Villa Park. So for me personally, I'm really excited to have him on board, yeah.
I'm still to be won over a little bit, but I guess one of the things that's in the plus column from Gerrard's perspective is that he seems to have turned down the Newcastle gig. Whether or not he was realistically being considered for it, you would say he probably was, given that they ended up with their third choice, it looks like. So the fact that he turned that down means that he wasn't just looking for any job in the Premier League, and means that he wanted to take something seriously, and obviously sees that there's an opportunity here at Villa to take it seriously. There is that nagging concern about the Liverpool job being constantly spoken about with regards to Gerrard over the next while, and I don't know how to make an accommodation with that, Ty.
A lot of people have asked me this question, and it's a tough one, really. And I think Jamie Carragher had said it outright last week that Aston Villa is no stepping stone club. And I do strongly believe that. Whether he ends up at Liverpool one day as a coach, maybe, but right now he needs to prove himself in the Premier League at the highest level. And he's coming in mean business. And back to your comment on the Newcastle gig, Aston Villa Football Club as a whole is a huge package. You know, so you have to take into consideration how you've set up. Newcastle don't have a youth set up like us. They haven't invested millions and millions in their youth products. And, you know, we have so much talent coming through the ranks. And that's an exciting time, especially under Steven Gerrard, because he's one of the greatest Premier League players of all time. So he's going to have that pulling power with the youngsters to bring down to Villa Park for the ones who are in the younger years. But I think he will end up at Liverpool eventually, but again, it's one of those things. I don't think it will happen until he proves himself at the highest level, and I think that's really important. I think he needs to. He's listened to the owner's plan, and he's got to take it on board. And if he doesn't succeed, then he'll end up with the same path as Dean Smith, unfortunately. So he's got a lot to prove for himself and for Aston Villa. So I'm excited for it.
Ty, tell me a little bit about what the transfer system is at Villa, because it felt like the last manager ended up with too many forwards and not quite the type of players that he wanted to play, and then that resulted in him trying to shoehorn everybody into the team, the formation changing very regularly, and the settled team didn't ever emerge. And in the end, that might have done for him. So is there a transfer committee? Who makes the final decision on whether or not the squad is imbalanced or what the right balance in the squad is?
As far as I'm aware, it falls on Johan Long, and who's in charge of recruitment. And then it will ultimately fall on Perslow. It will fall on Christian Perslow. It'll be between those two, I would say. I would say that Dean Smith would have had a say in the transfers to some point, to some extent. But, you know, we've losing Jack Grealish in the summer. It was one of those things. How do you replace a £100 million player as your club captain supports Aston Villa? It's not possible. So there was always going to be teething issues at the start of this season without Jack, and we were a substantially better team with Jack in there. The issue with the forwards is, I mean, it's a nice position to be in, but we essentially had too many strikers. We used to play a 4-3-3 system, and we had Ollie Watkins and Danny Ings, who both want to play in the middle. So it caused all kinds of problems. So to get a system in with two up the top, they have to change things. If they want to keep the players happy, they have to change things. And I don't think Ollie Watkins would have gone back on the left wing. I think Steven Gerrard will stick to a 4-3-3. I think that seems to be his style of play from a little bit of research that I've done on the system that he played at Rangers. Plays a high press, you know, and when you're in the ball, you're in control of the pitch. You know, that's very much what Steven Gerrard will bring. He'll bring that intensity of when you are on the ball, you are in control. And I'm really excited for that. But I think Steven Gerrard's been given a budget in January as well to do some bits. So that's also going to be exciting. I think there's a few areas of the field that we need to definitely add to the ranks, but I don't think the forwards is one of them.
Okay, it definitely is a two-way street, the whole Jack Grealish thing, where you mentioned there the money that they got for him and the signings that they've made with that money. That naturally, it's not necessarily bad signings that they've made. It's just a matter of time before those signings will actually bed in. Is that your sense, that actually the Grealish money, as it were, that'll just take a little bit of patience from Aston Villa supporters before this thing actually comes good?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's going to take time. I mean, I read somewhere online that Dean Smith, in his showdown talks with Perslow when he had lost his job, that he had stressed, apart from the game before he had lost, before he was sacked, he said that Buendia, Watkins and Bailey had only played 35 minutes together. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, okay, we've got a valid point there. These players haven't had time to gel on the pitch. And I just feel like we had lost our identity on the field, and I don't want to blame that it was the strikers hadn't gelled together. I feel like we had lost our identity on the pitch. We were playing a lot of hoofball. We didn't really look like we had a plan, and that's where after we had lost that fifth one in the row, heads really started to drop after that.
It's funny, 2-0 up against Wolves with 10 minutes left to go, it looks like everything's going well. Was that Buendia's best game? Had he come off the bench or had he started that game? But certainly he'd made contributions in that game. You're like, oh, I'm starting to see something here. Yeah. And then it just all went tits up. And like, that's that sliding doors moment in Dean Smith's Villa career, where if they win that game, he's still in the job now.
Absolutely, Aaron. The part of the problem I had with that game was we were 2-0 up and we kept two up top. We kept the shape, we kept the formation, and we got punished for it. I think they brought on Podence, Wolves, and he changed the game. He bought issues, and they punished us for it. And that was a really tough one to take, you know, not just because Wolves are a local team, just because going 2-0 up and then falling apart when you've had a really good 80 minutes of football. It is a really tough one to take because we were predominantly the better team for the majority of the game, and then the last 10 minutes we crumble.
The going three at the back as well kind of seems like one of those things that you need to be very committed to it. You need to really understand exactly what the ambition of the team is going to be when that happens. It felt a little bit like it was a stopgap to try and shore up a defence, and in the middle of that, when you go back to that, you drop Tyrone Mings, who's obviously kind of this iconic cult figure who had been a leader for the team over the last couple of years and got to the fringes of the England team and right into the England team in the Euros. Like, that just felt like a manager who was beginning to doubt himself and second guess his decisions. And when that happens, you can see why a club will ultimately say, right, sorry, mate, you've lost the run here. And rather than wait for you to get it back, we're going to go another direction.
Yeah, the change of formation was a tough one. People were optimistic because they wanted to see change because they seen the flaws in the 4-3-3. But when we went with the 3-5-2, if you want to call it that, there was times where it looked great, but there was times where we got punished for it really bad. And we're in a position where we had, we matched the clean sheet record of Brad Friedel in Emi Martinez's first season at Aston Villa. And then this season, we're not even getting close to clean sheets. We're getting dominated in most of our games. So there's definitely, it's nice to get that feel-good factor back, because social media hasn't been the greatest to be around. You know, it's been pretty doom and gloom on social media. A lot of people have been, you know, there was a lot of people calling for Dean Smith to go. We need change. And predominantly, I think we needed someone in the middle of the field. And I said that during the transfer window. And I think that was somewhere where we looked very light and it never came through. So I think better days are ahead, most definitely.
Even taking that into account, given the fact that Aston Villa are 2 points above the relegation zone, was there any part of you that thought to yourself, God, it is a little bit risky going for a Gerrard at this moment? I'm not saying a point Big Sam or anything like that, but there were maybe a few more seasoned Premier League managers that might have been appointed for a team that might be in a relegation battle.
I mean, you could look at it that way, but I don't look at it in a way that we're in a relegation battle. I just look at it, we've got a bad run of form. The squad we have, I don't think we're anywhere near relegation battle. Right. Anything in the top half of the table, I would class as success for this season so far. Whether that happens or not, it's a different story. But what we have to do is get behind the players, get behind Steven Gerrard and believe in what he's going to bring to Villa. You know, he's a huge figure in football as a whole. So I'm really excited to see what he brings to Aston Villa. And in a way, there probably isn't that much pressure on him as much as we probably think, because can we do much worse than five in a row? As long as it's not another five in a row, then I don't think he can do much worse, if I'm honest.
I hope you're right.
It's interesting that you say that you classify a top half of the finish as a successful season. Like when kind of like thinking about last year, I thought that last season was definitely, you could make an argument that maybe Villa overachieved what people predicted at the start of the season, and they still finished 11th. So you think that this team this year from this position has a chance of outdoing what was a relatively successful season last year?
Definitely, yeah. We had a great start to the season last year, you know, with the 7-2 bopping against Liverpool. There were some great results and we gave some really good teams a really good game on the pitch. And then our form fell off towards the end of the season, and that was where we started to slip down a little bit. We could have easily finished top half of the table and pushed for Europe if we had Jack for a full fit season. But I think we've had that bad run of form at the start of the season this year, and I think it's going to progress. One thing that I do know about Steven Gerrard is he doesn't take any nonsense. I've seen something about him and Michael Beale where they read the heart rate monitors of the players, and if they're not reaching a certain level, then he has conversations with them of, why aren't you working as hard as everybody else? He's just a no-nonsense manager. As much as we feel like he's Steven Gerrard, he's the English hero for everyone in England, he doesn't take any nonsense, and that's what we need. Is we need someone who's strict. I feel like maybe things were a bit too soft at Villa Park, and we let people probably get away with a bit too much. I know our training sessions start at 12 p.m. because there's people who are up all night playing online games. And when you look at something like that, and that's a real thing. Yeah,
really?
That's a real, yeah.
Ah, no.
I won't say any names of players. I won't target anyone. But there's people who are playing computer games till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And Dean Smith had said that in an interview and said, look, some of the younger players are up late playing, and training at that time just isn't a good idea. So they have training at 12 o'clock.
I'm shocked. Genuinely shocked. I didn't know that. That's, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, true story.
Well, that's the type of stuff that will get you fired. Ultimately.
Yeah.
Comment here from For the Love of Paul McGrath podcast on YouTube. Steven Gerrard's Claret and Blue Army. Great stuff, Ty. Great point about the Villa package. Looking forward to the weekend. UTV. The package, just briefly before we go, there's two quick things that I want to ask about. One is Morgan Sanson. Does he exist? Is he a real human being? Is he real? Is he ever going to play football for Villa? Is he any good?
He definitely hasn't had his chance yet at Villa Park. And I think his attitude now with Steven Gerrard coming in will play a huge factor in that. Got a chance for a clean slate. He's had some bad luck with injuries, which, you know, isn't his fault. And then he's had COVID recently as well. So I'd definitely like to see him be given a shot, whether he turns out to be the player that we wanted in terms of what he'll bring to Villa. I don't know. But I'm willing to take that risk, give him 90 minutes, give him a few games, let's see what he's got, let's see what his game is. Give him a chance, you know. If Steven Gerrard wants to do some business in the middle of the field in January, that's fine. But let's explore the options within the club first and see where you really are short.
The second question was just... I'd love to see him play to see if he's any good or not, because it looked like the reputation was excellent and the track record was excellent and the stats were really good. So maybe he can cut it now. The other thing is that just that package. Can you explain to people who are kind of unfamiliar? Villa's youth system is very famous and storied, and it looks like the crop of youngsters coming through are excellent. What's realistic in terms of how many of them actually make it to the first team for Villa, as opposed to, you know, loads of these young kids have come through Villa, got one or two games, and then ended up having great careers for other teams. What's your instinct about what's going on now?
There's a huge buzz around that, and when you invest your time in it and you realise of how much we are investing in it, it's a very exciting prospect. You know, we've got the Chukwuemeka brothers who have come from Northampton. We had a player play in the FA Cup game last night for Stockport, who were 3-2 down in the 85th minute and went on to win it in extra time, 5-3. A Villa player come on and change the game. You got Brad Young, who's a huge talent, reminds me of a young Jamie Vardy. You got Louis Barry, who's on loan at Ipswich, again, he's going to be a great talent. You know, he scored in the FA Cup against Liverpool when that COVID bout happened and we had no players and we had to play the young ones in the FA Cup. You know, he's going to be a great player too. There's just a real good feel good factor around that element is we're investing in the younger players and we're showing that we have the best facilities and the best youth players in English football. And that's what it's all about, is we're not just planning for now, we're planning for the future as well. And you can see that that's the owner's plans as well, is that they just want to make Aston Villa as a whole, you know, they want to maybe relive some of the moments that we've had in history. But whether all of the players will not make it, who knows? But there's definitely something there that are pushing. You know, you've got Jadon Philogene-Badase, who's pushing through now. You've also got Carney Chukwuemeka. He's also pushing through. You got Kane Kessler-Hayden. I think you'll see a few appearances from him in a few cup runs next year. There's just a lot to look forward to in terms of the youth prospects.
Yeah, and if Steven Gerrard can get that right, then he will be a success. And look, ultimately, if he's going to get the Liverpool job, it's because he's done a really good job at Villa. And that's the way I think that we need to look at this as Villa fans. Ty, I've got to say, if Stevie G's debut is anywhere near as good as yours, it's going to be great. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Thanks for having us. Cheers, guys.
It's Ty Bracey there. You should check out his podcast if you're a Villa fan. It's called Villa Spaces, and you can follow him on Twitter. He could be one of the big Villa accounts. Yeah, 18 minutes past 9 this morning. You'll have heard Padraig O'Kane and John Anthony there with Owen talking about the College Football Classic, the Aer Lingus College Football Classic. Be the first to get tickets to see Northwestern Wildcats versus Nebraska Huskers at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday the 27th of August 2022 through the official game pre-sale today. You can sign up to the Club Gridiron mailing list on otbsports.com/Club Gridiron, and that's a good Christmas present for anybody who's an American football fan in your family. Looking forward to that game.
Yeah. Next summer, and then obviously there's the Notre Dame game, then the year after that. I suspect there's going to be a good few of the Nebraska contingent over here next summer for that. It looks like an unbelievable place. Obviously, the video we played, you came from Northwestern, we got to see that up close and personal. They're going to bring a huge amount of people. Everybody I was chatting to in the tailgate seems pretty excited to come on over. I just hope they all stick to their word. You know, they may have been a few cans of Four Loko deep, but they said they were going to come to Ireland for the game. So every single person in that video that I...
And they'll all be staying with you.
Yep, there is. I've got two couches. So first people in.
Two couchy in, eh?
I mean, I've got many leather-bound books. I also have two sofas.
Right. Phil Egan, I don't know if you can follow that, but welcome.
It's nice to know that there's always the option there, Owen.
One is bigger than the other.
The Premier League is back, right? And it seems like people are kind of sleeping a little bit on this for the last 24 or 48 hours, because the international football window was good and took over, despite what Michael Owen says, and took over everybody's thoughts. But luckily, Man United reminded us that all is well. The five-a-sides are competitive and good, and there's young kids coming up and they're happy to at least stand beside, if not kick, established team members of the first team squad who aren't good enough to play international football anymore. So all is well at Manchester United, right?
Yeah, and that's where United are at, that they have their first team players available in training because their form has been so bad, they've been left out of their international teams. So it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, the international break, it's almost, it's pressed pause on the Premier League, but you kind of realise quick enough on Saturday afternoon how quickly things can just slip back into the pandemonium, because United obviously are always one bad result away from a disaster. Obviously Chelsea are the first up on Saturday at 12:30 against Leicester. Then you've got the Liverpool-Arsenal game. You also throw in Steven Gerrard's first game as Villa manager. Dean Smith gets Norwich up and running again, plays the team that actually got him the sack as Villa manager. And then Conte has his first Premier League home game as Spurs manager on Sunday. City in action on Sunday as well. I kind of expect City now to put the foot down. So, yeah, it's the games are going to come thick and fast, obviously. And I think one thing that we're going to see over the weekend is just how things can move so quickly, whether it's another managerial casualty who's on the brink. There's only 11 games gone. It seems like a lot longer in terms of there's been so much, but it's very hard to tell even this early in the season who's the real deal. I'm kind of looking at that Liverpool-Arsenal game to see how good are Arsenal. Obviously didn't start the season very well, but had a few injuries, had a
6 points off the top.
Yeah, and you know, not conceding goals. Aaron Ramsdale's been a revelation. A guy that was written off before he even signed for Arsenal.
Yeah, it was a joke signing according to some people.
30 million for a guy that's not even going to be your first choice goalkeeper. Well, he's the first choice goalkeeper now. He's played for England. That save against Leicester is absolutely unbelievable. I know we were looking back at Gavin Bazunu's save against Luxembourg, but Ramsdale's is incredible as well. So this will be a really good test for them, because they've struggled at Anfield in the last, especially since Klopp has taken over at Liverpool.
They've got smashed at Anfield every
they
time.
Have and what tends to get happen is they get pinned in and they just can't get out. So one thing Liverpool have shown this season though is they're not as watertight in midfield where there's gaps, so Arsenal could get chances, but it could be an absolute cracker. It's because it's a 5:30 game as well under the lights, that'll certainly add to it. And Liverpool will be hurting because they lost to West Ham before the international break, so they need to bounce back as well. And they've a few injury doubts after the international break. Andy Robertson, looks like Henderson and Mane play, but they still are light in midfield, so that'll be one to watch. But Chelsea can go 6 points clear if they win that game against Leicester, and Leicester haven't been as good, but we know when they're good that they can cause anyone trouble. So
Leicester are 12th, just like we're still talking about the next Manchester United manager, and Brendan Rodgers is right there, and the job that he's done at Leicester has been so spectacular. He managed to take over a difficult scenario, win trophy, and continuously get them into European football, if not quite the Champions League. But this season they're actually genuinely struggling to reach the same levels that they were at.
Yeah, they've been conceding too many goals, and Johnny Evans is back in now, but he was out injured for a while, and they obviously brought in Vestergaard from Southampton, who a lot of teams were looking at him for a while, but then as the games went on with Southampton, you could see that he does make quite a few errors. I wasn't impressed with him either at the Euros for Denmark. I thought, even thinking back to that semi-final against England, he was definitely the weak link in that Danish defence, and I think England targeted him. So he's actually been taken out of the team. Johnny Evans is back in, and they look a bit more solid. But saying that, they lost to Arsenal a few weeks ago. A game, as I said, Ramsdale doesn't save that, or doesn't save the follow-on. I know, look, he deserves the bit of luck for the follow-up, because the first save was so unbelievable. And there was good footage of him actually talking to Ben Foster after Arsenal beat Watford. You know, Ben Foster obviously brings his GoPro, and you know he's quite media savvy now, and he interviewed Ramsdale after the game, and they talked about that save, and he said, look, when you pull off that save, you deserve a little bit of luck in the follow up. So if that had gone in and Leicester equalised and they go on to win, who knows? But they're not as impressive. I'm not really on board the whole Brendan Rodgers to Manchester United thing, because look, he's a better manager than Solskjaer and he would do a better job, but I don't think he's the man that's going to bring United back to where they want to be.
Why not?
I just don't think he's at that level. Like, you're talking about the best managers in the Premier League. You're obviously mentioning Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola. Tuchel would be behind them. And then Rodgers would fall in around there somewhere. If you're Manchester United, you want the best. Unfortunately for United, should include Conte. Conte actually would be in the conversation with the best. United didn't fancy him.
No, it looks like they're genuinely interested in Zidane at the moment. They're trying to turn his head, even though I would love to see Zidane as the manager of Manchester United. I think that would be an excellent 18-month period in our lives where we get to talk about, is Zidane getting sacked this week? They really made a bad decision here where they've gone for like another high-profile player whose tactical approach seems to be to let the players decide what's going to happen. And that worked when he was at Real Madrid because he had some of the best players in the world in their pomp. But right now it doesn't seem to be working for whatever reason. Mm. Look, my counterpoint to that about the Rodgers thing is there's not that much difference between the playing staff at the respective squads and the money that Rodgers would get if he was given it. He could impact by making changes to the point where they become a team that has a style of play that delivers results. So they're going to beat all the bad teams more often than not because of the difference in quality of player that they can afford. And then it comes down to whether or not he's happy enough to play on the break against Man City, Liverpool and Chelsea, and he probably would be, you know.
Let's see what they did in the FA Cup final last year.
But there's a word you mentioned there, Ger, Liverpool. Brendan Rodgers used to manage Liverpool. I think we could say, oh, it's 2021, these things don't matter. They do. Now, I'd be interested to hear the views of United fans. What do they think?
Well,
do they
want to form? They're so broken now. They're so beaten. They're so unsure of themselves that it's like, well, I could talk myself into Brendan Rodgers if I had to.
But they shouldn't have to do that, though. That's my point. That United should be aiming higher. I think Brendan Rodgers has done a really good job at Leicester. And as I said, I think he would improve Manchester United, but not to the level that they require. But when I say that they require, the owners haven't shown that they require that because they seem to be quite happy to let this Solskjaer thing play out, whereas it should have been ended a long time ago. But they do give money to the managers, but then there was Conte right there. Under their noses.
Right there.
Like, he would ruffle feathers, but that's exactly what they need from the top to the playing staff to the coaching staff, everything. And they've just let him sail on by. And look, I don't know how far he can bring Tottenham in terms of being a title challenger. It seems unlikely. He'll certainly improve them, but he was just, I thought he was perfect for United.
Yeah, like the thing is, there a sense that when you're looking at the best available managers then this summer that you have Conte, you have Pep, and you have Klopp out of work? So, like, take the three of them out of the equation then. Like, is Rodgers not necessarily one of the best managers in the continent then at that point, once you take those three out?
Like, you're looking at Roberto Martinez all of a sudden going, I mean, really? Is that going to be, am I getting into bed with Roberto Martinez? I'm not sure. He's just Brendan Rodgers with a Spanish accent.
Like, because it's that ranking of managers has differed quite a lot now in the last couple of years. Like, Jose has left the building on that front. Like, and
anyone that hires Jose deserves all the failures that they're going to get.
So, like, what you're getting, I suppose, like, and I guess this supports your point, you know what you're getting with Brendan Rodgers. You know you're getting maybe a top 10 manager, like, in Europe, one of Europe's top 10 managers potentially, or you can get someone who will potentially break into that top three or break into that top four as one of the top managers in the world, which is probably what is exciting a lot of Manchester United fans about Ten Hag. Not necessarily with what he's done so far, but because they see potential in him and what he's done is like, okay, this guy could become one of the great managers.
Yeah, and look, he's done a really good job at Ajax, and you think of some of the players that they've lost and they look even stronger this season in the Champions League. And You wonder, like, obviously Tottenham were interested in him, but he signed a new contract with Ajax. You wonder how long it would take for him to implement his ideas at Manchester United, because Ajax don't lose many games. United, obviously, over the last few seasons have lost more than they should be losing. Now, obviously, they finished second last season, but they were never really in the title challenge, even though they were top early January. But no one genuinely believed that they could win the league. If Ten Hag comes in, and they've a few bad results, then like, patience runs thin very quickly. You know, that's just the pressure of the job.
It does, although they do have a track record of backing managers over a long period of time since Ferguson. They've given everybody, it seems like, more time. Maybe you could make a slight argument about Moyes. If Moyes had been given the opportunity to clear out the players quicker, who, I don't know. I mean, he did.
Yeah, I think a problem Moyes had, though, is he just didn't talk the right game. And I know, like, it's only words, but they can be. You have to sound. You have to have the right noises coming out of what you say,
and he lacked the self confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually really refreshing to hear him now as the West Ham manager talking about, yeah, we can finish in the Champions League places, because that's where I thought he really let himself down as United manager. The reason he got the job was because Ferguson thought he was good enough to do it. So, you know,
something happened.
Believe in yourself.
Something did happen between him getting the job and actually taking the job and getting in there and just being overwhelmed by, ooh, you know, that's Rooney and Rio and that group. And he couldn't just quite manage those
first impressions as well are so key, and it sounds like he just didn't make the right impression with them from the start.
I didn't think Carlo Ancelotti was that good at Everton, right? He did a good run at the start of the season, and he's a goal scorer who was scoring goals, but actually at the end his results weren't great. Would Carlo Ancelotti be the perfect Man United manager? Is that what we're talking about here, that there's just a weird super club thing where you've got to be able to talk crap to the board, make sure that the director of personnel is doing what you want to do, make sure that the superstar players are actually putting in at least a minimum of 70% effort all the time? Is that what they're like? Because I'd personally rather Brendan Rodgers than Ancelotti at this point.
No, I would agree with you there, because Everton, pretty much the second half of last season, were awful to watch, and
he might already have had an eye on another job. Who knows?
Yeah,
but like, I guess my point is, so if it's not, if Ten Hag is going to be under too much pressure because we've yet to see what he does at a genuine super club, like, at least Brendan Rodgers knows the pressure of Liverpool. The candidate list is really, really small for these gigs, and that's probably why you end up with a figure like Solskjaer being this kind of compromise figure who's going to bring the fans together, who's going to help the commercial side of the business, who's going to do what the board tell him to do, who's going to pretty much acquiesce to the star players, and who will deliver you a top four and semi-final, roughly, and that's enough.
Are United looking at this in a sort of, in a kind of a twee way, where they think the Manchester United manager should be a manager for life, where you've got Alex Ferguson who comes in and presides over the club for a long period of time? I wonder, was that part of like the appeal of David Moyes, where they were like, this guy was at Everton for 11 years, whereas David Moyes was like used to his long term relationship, and then he couldn't handle the cut and thrust of the modern managerial relationship statuses, which is loose and fast and going in for 2 or 3 years and getting out of there, Conte style or even Pep Guardiola style. And I wonder if Manchester United are also attached to that a little bit, where they're like, no, Solskjaer is our guy for life until things get so bad.
Those managers, like, that just doesn't exist anymore. You mentioned Guardiola. Like, Guardiola and Klopp are seen as long-term managers at the moment, even though Klopp's only at Liverpool 6 years. But it seems like an eternity, because
it is, in football terms now.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's obviously got a few more years left in his contract at Liverpool. But it's very hard to get the
it's impossible.
Manager.
It is impossible, because it's such a weird combination of skills that you need.
Yeah, I find it hard to picture Brendan Rodgers in the dugout at Old Trafford.
Well, maybe
in the home dugout.
We could be months away from it now at this stage.
Well, look,
or less.
United are going to win away to Watford on Saturday, and everything will be grand again. Cavani's already issued the rally cry this week, saying, you know, you got to have a bit of faith, and we'll turn it around. And Watford is a nice game. United's best performances tend to be away from home.
Yeah, that's perfect for them.
It's good for them to get out of Old Trafford.
As we know, they were happy at their five-a-side this week, and there's loads of young kids coming through who are superstars in the making. All as well. I don't know what we're even talking about this for. Very quickly, we're totally out of time, but Eddie Howe, success or failure?
What is success? Success this season is keeping them up.
Is he going to do that?
I think he probably will. I think Brentford's a nice game for them as well. Brentford have kind of gone off the boil a little bit. Raya, the goalkeeper's been injured, and they've lost a few games. Now, they're going to have to work hard to win games, Brentford. They will always give you a good test with the front two that they have and their direct style. But I think St James's Park will be a happier place now that they have a manager. They seem to have a plan for what they're doing this season, and surely they get in a few players in January and they should be okay. But I honestly, I don't say that with great confidence though. I'm kind of almost like 50-50
on. Yeah, very interesting to see who will sign for them, which clubs will do business with them, yeah. And how they can,
the Newcastle tax,
exactly how much is that going to be worth. So let's wait and see. And look, maybe Eddie Howe knows intimately the best places to get players, and his recruitment is going to be far superior.
Play Jeff Hendrick
than it was when he was signing.
Build a team around Jeff Hendrick.
Jordan Ibe, didn't he sign Jordan Ibe?
He would have done it, I suppose, because he played for Bournemouth in the Premier League, and
yeah,
was their manager in the Premier League the entire thing.
Right, Roy McIlroy has dropped a shot and is now only 5 under through 9, which is good enough for a share of the lead. He had the outright lead on 6 under through 8, but he's 5 under through 9, and looks like he is doing pretty well at the moment. Oh, 6 under through 10. Fucking, that's my
Roy. Apologies there for some fruity language.
Very unparliamentary. Sorry. 9:36 this morning. OTBAM live with Gillette. Proud sponsors of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mo. Feel good stuff. Thanks very much for that.
OTB AM
with Gillette. Proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mo.